Matthew chapter 14, verses 22 to 33. Immediately, Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to the other side, while the disciples dismissed the crowd. After he had dismissed them, he went up on a mountainside by himself to pray. When evening came, he was there alone, but the boat was already a considerable distance from land, buffeted by the waves because the wind was against it. During the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went out to them, walking on the lake. When the disciples saw him walking on the lake, they were terrified. "It's a ghost," they said, and cried out in fear. But Jesus immediately said to them, "Take courage, it is I. Don't be afraid." "Lord, if it's you," Peter replied, "tell me to come to you on the water." "Come," he said. Then Peter got down out of the boat, walked on the water, and came towards Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid, and beginning to sink, cried out, "Lord, save me." Immediately Jesus reached out his hand and caught him. "You of little faith," he said, "why did you doubt?" And when they climbed into the boat, the wind died down. Then those who were in the boat worshipped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God."
Good evening, 7 o'clock. It's been so long since we were together. Seems like moments. Hey, I wonder if you've ever had that experience of being paralyzed by fear. I had that recently. A couple of months ago, a part of one of my teeth fell out. And here's the thing. I'm afraid of the dentist. Not quite sure why. Maybe it's the noise of the drill, you know, the... Or maybe it's the experience of getting braces on when I was a teenager. Every time I know that's an orthodontist, but they all gang up on you, those guys. And it felt like they were sort of putting in a crankshaft to tighten those things up every time I went in. My mouth would ache for days. Or maybe it was the experience of my brother-in-law who went in to get his wisdom teeth out, and they put him under a general anesthetic, and when he woke up, he had bruises all over his chest. And I figured that's from getting the knee on there so I could yank those things out. I don't know what it is. I had this fear of dentists, and recently when this tooth thing happened, it literally paralyzed me. Several times I thought about ringing the dentist to make an appointment, like I knew I should, and always I managed to find something more urgent to do, like check Facebook, or take the garbage bins out, or clean out my sock drawer. My fear stopped me taking the action that I knew was needed. Anyway, that story has a good ending because I made the call, I visited, got the tooth fixed, yes, fantastic. But while I was there, they said I need some more work done, I need to go back and make another appointment. Does anyone need their sock drawer cleaned out? Just checking. I think sometimes followers of Jesus can get stuck with a similar sort of fear that paralyzes us. Fear of all sorts of things can stop us from taking the action we know that we need to take in order to be obedient to Jesus, in order to keep walking with Jesus. Now, we're in a series called Rising Above Life's Sticking Points. And we're working our way through Matthew's Gospel and seeing what we can learn to help us get through those points where we're walking with Jesus, but we get stuck. And that point where we get stuck stops us from growing in him. And over these last few weeks, we've looked at doubt, we've looked at worry. Last week, we looked at all the sticking points and the distractions that come with the different sorts of soil, and Jesus' call for us to be good soil. And tonight, we're looking at that passage we just heard read from Matthew 14, Jesus walking on the water. And for some people here, they might be thinking, is Jesus walking on water? As if that sort of thing can actually happen. I mean, everyone knows that people don't walk on water. And if you're thinking that, well, you know, fair enough at one level. But here's the thing, you see, this episode features Peter, one of Jesus' closest disciples, but also a major, major leader in the early church after Jesus' death and resurrection. And in this story, Peter is not painted in a very good light at all. Jesus actually rebukes him and says, "You of little faith." And that's incredibly embarrassing, incredibly shameful thing in that culture to have been said about the major leader. So you wouldn't make this stuff up and put it into the scriptures. The only reason this story is there of Peter is that that's the way that it happened. And Matthew felt like there was something for us readers to learn by looking at this. So it's worth our attention tonight. If you don't have it open, I'd love you to open it up now on either a Bible. If you don't have one, you can grab one from the foyer, or you can open it up on your device. Matthew chapter 14. Tonight I want to briefly look at four things from this passage that can help us rise above fear in our walk with Jesus, so that we can fully grow to be the people he wants us to be. And the first thing we see is that Jesus puts us where fear can happen. Jesus puts us where fear can happen. And I know some people that when they come to Jesus, they think that now they've done some sort of deal with God, and now God owes them a good life. It's like, well, God, I'm putting in all these hours here, I'm kind of ticking all the boxes, keeping all the rules, so you better keep the good stuff flowing. Others read certain parts of the Bible and think that once you become a Christian, then the good times will flow. If you have enough faith, if you're close enough to Jesus, if you pray enough, if you know the right promises in the Bible, you know where to find them so that you can name them and then you can claim them. And I know lots of people who aren't Christians, they look at, you know, Christians' lives and they say, hey, your life doesn't seem to be going any better than mine. In fact, at a lot of points, your life looks like it's going worse than mine. So why would I bother with this Christianity stuff? But let's check out what happens as our passage opens. Matthew 14 and verse 22. Immediately, Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to the other side while he dismissed the crowd. And after he dismissed them, he went up on a mountainside by himself to pray. And later that night, he was there alone, and the boat was already a considerable distance from land, buffeted by the waves, because the wind was against it. Jesus made the disciples get into the boat. And the word there for made is actually a word for using force. Like, hurry up, get into the boat, you guys. Quick, hurry up. And why would he be doing that? Because the episode just before this is Jesus feeding the 5,000. You remember there was a crowd, there were 5,000 men. That count didn't include the women and children. So there could have been maybe up to 10,000 people there. And Jesus, with the disciples, had fed them with just a few loaves and fish. And after that, after everyone had full bellies, this mood went through the crowd. John's Gospel tells us they were thinking, hey, our great king has come. Here's a guy who can feed us from nothing. One of the major problems with going to battle with anyone, particularly with the Romans, is that one of their chief strategies to beat you was to barricade you in and starve you out. If they had someone who could provide food all the time, hey, we can mount a military force against our occupiers, we can kick them out. This guy's going to be our king. And they wanted to make Jesus a king by force. And Jesus is like, no. That's not how it's going to work. He knew the only way for him to take his rightful crown was through the cross and through resurrection. And so Jesus, get into the boat, disciples, and get out of here. And Jesus dismisses the crowd. And so he makes the disciples leave that context where they would have been thinking, hey, maybe we're starting to be on the winning side here. Jesus is managing to pull big crowds. Maybe we are on the right side. And Jesus bursts that, gets them into the boat as night is falling. And as the wind is starting to pick up, he says, get out of here. And here's the thing, in your walk with Jesus, you're going to face hard things. Some of those hard things will be because we live in a fallen world. Things like sickness, cancer can come at the drop of a hat. Some of those hard things will be because you're a follower of Jesus. If you try and stand stand up for Jesus or share the gospel with someone, the gospel that says that there is a right and a wrong. That's controversial these days. That can bring hard times on you. And many of those hard things may cause us to be afraid. And it's so easy to think if we're scared of things, then God must have abandoned us. But that's not the case at all. Jesus put the disciples into the place where they were about to experience it. Jesus puts us in places where we will experience fear. In fact, it may be one of his loving strategies for us to grow in our trust of him, to grow to the next level of joy in following him. It's a bit like one of my boys was little, and we went up to one of the water parks on the Gold Coast, and we looked up at one of the big water slides there. I said, right, let's go. I said, yeah, come on, let's go. I said, come on, that's not a dragon. He said, no, I don't want to go on that. I said, come on, you don't want to go on that. We got halfway up the stairs, he starts screaming. I'm like, it's too far to go down now. We pick him up. We start going up the stairs. I don't want to go. I don't want to go. We get all the way up the top, and the attendant's looking at me going, really? Is he? Really? You could go down the stairs. We're not going down the stairs. We come all the way here. We get him onto the tube. He'd sit in. He's still grabbing you. He's wrestling me. I just bear hug him. I say, right, push, push, quick, push us. So we go down this slide with all the bends and the turns. All the way down. We get down to the bottom, splash into the pool at the bottom. And I turn around, I turn him around, look at his face, smile, ear to ear. Let's do that again. You have to push through his fear to open up that new realm of experiences of joy. God may do that with us when we experience fear. It's not a sign of abandonment. Jesus puts us in a place. That's the first point to overcoming fear, as a sticking point, to realize that Jesus puts us where we can feel it. The second thing to see from our passage is that Jesus gives us courage to overcome fear. Jesus gives us courage to overcome fear. Our story continues in verse 25. Shortly before dawn, Jesus went out to them walking on the lake. And when the disciples saw him walking on the lake, "It's a ghost," they said, cry out in fear. They're terrified. They didn't say, "Oh, it's a ghost." They're screaming. They're like grabbing each other, like trying to get away from it. I reckon Peter's in someone's lap, you know, cowering. "It's a ghost." Now, it's worth just pausing here to notice this. Sometimes it's okay to be afraid. It was really normal. Because here are the disciples. They're out on the boat in the middle of the water. It's just before dawn. They've been out all night. They're exhausted. The wind has been smashing their boat. The waves have been coming in all night. They've just had this massive, crazy day where Jesus has fed like 10,000 people, and they were in the middle of that, and they thought it was great. And then they got shoved onto this boat, and they've been out there for hours. And then in the dark, this figure comes walking out on the water. What? No one walks on the water. It has to be a ghost. They're freaking out. And that's okay. It's okay to be afraid. That's not weakness. That's normal to feel like that at certain times. But it's what we do with that fear that makes all the difference. And see what happens next. Verse 27. But Jesus immediately said to them, "Take courage. It is I. Don't be afraid." Take courage, he says. Courage is not about pretending that you're not afraid. Courage is about acting to do what the right thing is or what you know is good, even when you're afraid, despite the fact that you are afraid. And courage comes from knowing who Jesus really is. When Jesus says here, "It is I," it sounds a bit like whatever. But the words are actually, "I am," in the original. Jesus says, "Take courage, I am." And for anyone who's reading Matthew's Gospel and knows the Old Testament, they know that God, in the Old Testament, reveals himself to his covenant people by his name, which is I am. I am who I am. That covenant name, that covenant God is the God who acts for his people. He's the God who acts in loving kindness for his people. He's the God who acts with a mighty hand to save his people. And Jesus says, I am. And he is saying there to the disciples, he says, know who I am, know what I can do, know my commitment to you, and from that, take courage to act in the face of your fears. And I've seen all sorts of people get courage from knowing who Jesus is to face their fears and to press on in the face of it. Friends, we know have a daughter with severe special needs. And right from the time that she was diagnosed with this severe syndrome in her first year of life, they've been afraid of what their future would be for their daughter, for their family, having someone like that, how they were going to cope, how they were going to manage. And we've seen them time and time again turn to Jesus, to know who he is, and from that to get the courage to press on and make the next hard decision that they needed to make in order to keep going. I know some guys and girls in high school who heard the challenge to invite their friends to Crossfire to hear about Jesus. And they were afraid to do that because that means putting themselves out there, identifying themselves with Jesus and the church and all that. And what happens if that happens? I might get ridiculed. I might get mocked. And yet, remember who Jesus is. They take courage. And they press on and invite anyway. I know people who are afraid of being ridiculed for standing up for Jesus and his word and his truth in the current climate with the debate about same-sex marriage and whether the definition of marriage should be changed for our country. The vitriol that's being poured out by the mainstream media upon Christians is relentless. It's nasty. It's not going to stop. And that creates a climate of fear where people say, I don't know if I want to stand up and be counted amongst that. Yet I know people remember who Jesus is. Whatever comes, leaning into him. Jesus puts us where we will feel fear, and he gives us courage in the face of fear. But there's another source of fear as well, which comes from our third observation from our passage tonight. Distractions, doubt, and fear. All of my boys, my three boys, they enjoy running, and my youngest watches older two brothers compete in carnivals for years, and he had the chance a couple of years ago to compete in his own little mini carnival that they run for the kindies in year, the preps and the kindies in years. And he was in kindy, and there they were, all the boys from his class, all lined up on the starting line and ready to go. And at this stage, the ribbons don't really count. It's all about bragging rights in the playground, like who's the fastest in the class. So there they are, they're all lined up, they're all looking at each other. Bang, the gun goes off and off they go, they're racing, and it's hilarious to watch because almost as soon as they go, they start looking sideways. Both ways. It's remarkable that they could even take two steps and keep going forwards because they kept looking side to side. And they did this and the race finished, and I asked him afterwards, I said, why did you look sideways when you're running the race? He said, I just wanted to see where everyone else was. I wanted to see if I was beating them. And I said to him, you realize every time you look sideways, you slow down. He goes, I do not. I said, you do. He says, I do not. I said, right, well, prove it. So 12 months later, when the next carnival comes around, this is how long I keep things in order to prove things to my kids, right? There's something about me. I said, right, let's run the race. Remember, they keep looking straight ahead. I'm going to video. So I videoed it on the iPhone with the slow motion thing. Bang, the gun goes off and off they go. They're racing down the track, and sure enough, there they all are, looking sideways once again. And he finishes the race, and I said, you look sideways, you slowed. And he said, I did not. I said, you did. I said, let's watch the video. So we're watching the video, and you can see it. Every time he turns sideways, his stride gets shorter, and he slips further back in the race, and so does everyone else. So this year, he runs the race to get to go the full proper carnival. They run the full 100 metres. Straight ahead. That's what you do. Work about the results later. Don't try and work out the results halfway through the race. So he's running. Bang, he's off and running. And he's coming second. There's a kid in front of him. And then it was delicious. It's not irony, but it's delicious something or other. The kid in front turns and has a look sideways, and my boy goes past him and wins the race. Yes. Not that I'm competitive or anything. I don't really care about any of those sorts of things. There's an amazing similarity with what happens next in our passage. In verse 28, "Lord, if it's you," Peter replies, "tell me to come to you on the water." "Come," he said. And Peter got down out of the boat, walked on the water, and came toward Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid, and he began to sink, and he cried out, "Lord, save me." Peter sees Jesus, he hears Jesus, he gets the courage to get out. You remember, only minutes ago, he's the one freaking out in the boats, terrified, it's a ghost, he's in someone else's lap, cowering. And now he's like, "Yeah, I can get out of the boat, yeah, I'm going to walk to you, no worries." And he starts so well. He's walking across the water to Jesus, but then he looks sideways. He doesn't just slow down. He sinks. Now, why does this distraction cause him to sink? Jesus' response gives us the clue. Verse 31, "Immediately Jesus reached out his hand and caught him. 'You of little faith,' he said, 'why did you doubt?'" And the word doubt there literally means double-minded. See, Peter looks at the circumstances and he begins to ask himself, who's really in control here? Can Jesus really do what he said he would do? And the moment that he takes his focus off Jesus, the moment he gets distracted by the circumstances and stops looking at his Lord, that's when. And I think there's something massive for us to learn about this. We live in the age of distraction. Odds are, in a room this size, nighttime church, there's a bunch of you who aren't even listening to me right now. You're distracted by checking Instagram on your phones. I'm not going to try and see you anymore. I'm not looking at you. You know if it's you. Stop it! I read an article this week that says a whole generation is being trained. They're being having their brains rewired and trained to not even be able to focus on anything, let alone to focus on Jesus' voice above all the rest of the white noise of life. But if you feel yourself feeling afraid about what life is dishing up at the moment, about the climate that we're living in, the question is, are you being distracted? Are you being double-minded? Are the circumstances capturing your gaze instead of the Lord Jesus? Because here's the question, really, that it boils down to, if that's the situation. The question is, who is really in control? Is it Jesus? Or is it something else? Is it people? Is it nature? Is it randomness? That's the question you need to answer. Because if it's Jesus, if you've decided that it's Jesus, with all the evidence laid out, the cross and the resurrection, then are we listening to him? Are you leaning into him? Have you have your gaze fixed on him? Or how are you having a bet each way? Yeah, I want to fix my eyes on Jesus. I want to run to you. You know what? The approval of all of these people matters just as much as Jesus. I want to run to you. I want to have my gaze fixed to you. I want to walk across the water to you, Jesus. But you know what? I want to play the same game that everyone else is playing. Where we count our stuff and we measure our experiences and we see who's winning in life. I reckon the writer to the Hebrews has this episode in mind when he writes in Hebrews 12, verse 1. "Therefore, since we're surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders, all the distractions, and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of our faith. Friends, we can't look sideways. We will sink in double-minded fear. But that's not where this episode ends. It ends with our fourth observation, which is that Jesus calms our biggest fear. When I was in high school, I managed to win the lead in two of the high school musicals. And both times, all throughout the rehearsal period, I kept having this dream over and over again that it would be opening night, and I came onto the stage and I tried to say my first lines, but I forgot. And I looked like a gibbering idiot. It says more about me, isn't it? I'm revealing a lot of myself towards you tonight. I was afraid, you see. I had this fear that I would mess it up. I had the same sort of feeling when, with each of my kids, when they were babies, I held them with such joy. I thought, this is amazing. Then I had this horrifying thought. I thought, God, I can't believe that you would entrust another human life to someone like me. What if I mess it up? And I think one of our biggest fears can come like this in our walk with Jesus. We talk about sticking points and we talk about distractions and we look at our efforts to follow Jesus just this last week. And if we're honest, we would say, oh man, I have messed that up. And so what happens now? And I reckon that's another reason that Matthew included this passage in his gospel. He wanted all the readers, he wanted you and me, centuries later, to know that even the great Peter messed it up following Jesus. And he wanted them and us to know what happened when he did. Verse 30. But when Peter saw the wind, he was afraid and beginning to sink. He cried out, Lord, save me! Immediately, Jesus reached out his hand. When they climbed into the boat, the wind died down. And then those who were in the boat worshipped him, saying, truly, you are the Son of God. Peter cries out to Jesus, save me. He's gone from crying out in fear, being terrified, thinking Jesus was a ghost, cowering in one of the disciples' arms, to jumping out of the boat for Jesus. Yeah, I've got to walk to you, yeah. To sinking and saying, Lord, save me. All in the space of some minutes. I love Peter. He's great. Save me, Jesus. And look what Jesus does. Immediately, he reached out his hand. What incredible comfort, his friends. Jesus is right there. Willing to. And there have been times, I know, when I have messed up big time trying to follow Jesus. There have been times when I've had the chance to speak out for Jesus, to point people to him, and I've been too afraid. And so I've been quiet. Or there have been times when I've had the opportunity to make a radical decision in my life for Jesus. But I've looked at the circumstances, and I've been afraid. So I didn't go there. And I felt ashamed as I've sunk beneath those points. Maybe you've felt that too. Maybe you're there right now. And Jesus would go to the cross to pay for all of Peter's mess-ups and all of yours and all of mine. And so, you know, friends, there is nothing you can do in your walk with Jesus that can out-sin the cross. There is nothing you can do in your walk with Jesus that can out sin us. Even the great Peter denied he even knew Jesus when Jesus was about to go to the cross. He denied he even knew him. And Jesus could forgive him and restore him. And then he walked with him again. Jesus calms our greatest fear. He's there to catch us when we mess up. So how do we rise above the sticking point of fear in our walk? First, realize that our fears don't mean God has abandoned us. Jesus puts us where we will feel fear. Second, turn to Jesus for the courage to face our fears, realizing that he's in control. He's Lord over all. Third, put off our double-mindedness. Turn down the distractions. Keep our gaze fixed on Jesus. And lastly, walk in the knowledge that there is abundant grace if and when we need. Gracious Heavenly Father, thank you for your great love for us. Thank you that Jesus is the answer to our fears. Help us to realize fear is not bad in and of itself. Jesus puts us there to help us grow, but he gives us the courage to face them. Father, will you help us to put off distractions, to fix our gaze on Jesus and run to him, and to turn to him in the moments where we fail, knowing he will lovingly catch us and he will not let us go. Help us in this, for we are weak, but you are strong. And we pray it in Jesus' name.